Do you love Elon Musk? Do you hate Elon Musk? Do you have no idea what to think about Elon Musk? Then we have just the show for you.
He's become even more larger than life.
Buying Twitter doesn't get us closer to Mars.
They are like really close to the edge of like everything falling apart.
Like, oh, Elon, I volunteer, put a chip in my brain.
Each week on this podcast, we'll break down, analyze, and debate the most important stories on Musk and his empire.
It's all one big universe. You just work for Elon Inc.
From Bloomberg Businessweek, this is Elon Inc. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Law with June Grosso from Bloomberg Radio.
The Trump campaign has seen a revolving cast of lawyers pursuing its lawsuits challenging the election results, particularly in Pennsylvania, where the lawsuits have been concentrated. The law firm Porter Wright, Morris & Arthur withdrew from representing the campaign on Friday, and the lawyer who took over the case, Linda Kearns, moved to withdraw on Monday. The Lincoln Project, a group of Republicans who oppose President Trump, had started a media campaign against the law firms helping the Trump administration to contest Joe Biden's victory, specifically naming Porter Wright and Jones Day the nation's 10th largest law firm. Trump's communications director, Tim Murtaugh, said leftist mobs descended upon some of the lawyers representing the president's campaign and they buckled. The president's team is undeterred and will move forward with rock-solid attorneys to ensure free and fair elections for all Americans. Trump has picked Rudy Giuliani, his personal attorney, to lead his post-election legal battles. And Giuliani filed an application to join the case in Pennsylvania, which the other lawyers had left, just hours before a hearing was set to start. Joining me is Christopher Opfer, Bloomberg Law team leader for the business of law. So, Chris, tell us about Jones Day.
Sure. Jones Day is one of these just massive law firms. It's the 10th largest firm in the country with more than $1 billion, with a B, in gross revenue per year. I think they've got more than 1,000 attorneys across the country. Originally founded in Cleveland, Ohio, but has been come to be known as one of these white shoe Washington, D.C. firms that's really been a revolving door with sending attorneys into high-ranking positions in the federal government throughout the years. But certainly in during the Trump administration, Jones Day has been the law firm most closely associated by many people with the Trump administration. The firm itself advised the Trump campaign back for the 2016 election, continued to advise the campaign and the RNC throughout the next 4 years leading up to the most recent election, and has continued to be involved in lawsuits related to the election since Election Day just a few weeks ago. And so during Trump's administration, we saw several notable Jones Day lawyers fill top roles within the government. The one that most people are familiar with, of course, is Don McGahn, who was formerly White House counsel before returning to Jones Day last year. Another lawyer named Noel Francisco was Solicitor General, which is essentially the face of the Trump administration in the Supreme Court, arguing any cases on behalf of the government in the high court. He was there for most of President Trump's first term before returning to Jones Day last year.
The Lincoln Project started a social media campaign about Jones Day. What was the message of that campaign and how successful was it?
Well, the message was really that Jones Day attorneys and the firm itself, in the eyes of the folks at the Lincoln Project, should be ashamed of themselves for participating in these post-election lawsuits, which, at least according to the folks at the Lincoln Project, are nothing more than an assault on American democracy, a baseless attempt to undo the results of a fair and free election. And so it was two-pronged. Number one, they were building sort of a online public sense of outrage against the firm itself. And then they were attempting to pressure major Jones Day clients, including companies like General Motors, to stop doing business with the firm over this issue.
Did it work? What kind of repercussions did Jones Day have from this media campaign?
Well, it certainly had some impact. So the the same campaign was also aimed at a smaller law firm called Porter Wright, which was involved in some of the other cases involving the Trump administration. And that firm has since pretty quickly backed away and withdrawn from participating in those suits. Jones Day is involved in one single suit right now, and they're actually representing the Republican Party of Pennsylvania rather than the Trump campaign itself. But it's one of those lawsuits that's aimed at challenging the results of the election in Pennsylvania overall, and certainly is affiliated with the Trump administration and the campaign efforts there. And so they have not backed away, and it seems unlikely that they will back away given the firm's history and leadership, just not the type of folks who wilt to this sort of public pressure. But it has caused quite a stir within the halls of Jones Day, and particularly at its Washington, D.C. office. We reported that late last week, a large group of attorneys there at Jones Day's D.C. office, in a series of meetings with the head of the D.C. office, raised a number of concerns regarding the firm's involvement in the case. That meeting was described as very tense by some of the people who were there. Basically, the attorneys were saying that the firm is risking its good name, its sort of professional name in getting involved in something like this.
So Chris, Jones Day said it's not representing any entity in any litigation challenging or contesting the results of the 2020 general election. In light of that Pennsylvania case, is that strictly true?
That is incorrect. And so Jones Day has made a big deal of not representing the Trump campaign or the RNC itself in much of the ongoing litigation. And it is true that the firm is not involved in many of the cases that have already been thrown out of court, both in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Arizona, and elsewhere. But the case that the firm is involved is representing the Republican Party of Pennsylvania. Essentially, they're challenging Pennsylvania's mail-in ballot system. They say that the state has created this two-tier system where people who sent their ballots in via mail did not have to jump through the various hoops to prove that they are who they say they are, that folks who voted in person had to do things like signatures, just sort of all the ID requirements that you face when you go in to vote in person. And they say, the Jones Day lawyers say, that this has created an unconstitutional two-tier system where the restrictions and the requirements for voting depend on whether or not you do it in by mail or in person. And so while that may not be directly aligned with the Trump campaign, if a court were to rule in favor of Jones Day, it certainly would be helpful to the Trump campaign's effort to disrupt the election, force recounts, and just generally sow some uncertainty into the entire election process.
So Jones Day might be feeling pressure. Tell us about its leadership structure. Whether or not it pulls out of these suits, is that dependent on the managing partner?
Certainly seems that way. The managing partner, Steve Brogan, who's been there for quite a while, is a hard-nosed leader that some say are very much in the mold of a Donald Trump, in that the buck stops with him. He's making a lot of these decisions, and certainly in such a high-profile case like this one, a decision to remain on the case or to withdraw certainly wouldn't happen without Brogan's input, for sure. And, you know, by all accounts, he's just not the type of guy who's going to decide not to do something simply because of the public pressure. What's interesting is that Brogan, of course, comes from sort of a Republican-leaning background. He's a Notre Dame Law School guy. And some of the most high-profile Jones Day attorneys in D.C. are also Republican background, including some of the folks who worked for the Trump administration. But when we went back and looked at the Federal Election Commission records, we found that 80% of donations for political candidates in the last cycle from Jones Day attorneys individually, 80% of those went to Democratic candidates. And what we've heard from people inside the building is that they've always thought of it as a largely apolitical place. And while there may be some grumbling about Jones Day's work on behalf of the Trump administration. It wasn't until recently with these election cases where folks really thought this is different. This is something where we're actively working to potentially undo a free and fair election.
Jones Day, as of October 19th, had received $2.9 million in legal fees from the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee. But that's just a drop in the bucket to Jones Day, isn't it?
It sure is. Yeah, we're talking about a firm that clocks more than $1 billion in gross revenue every year. And so certainly not doing it for the money, although you could say that they're developing a client relationship and certainly making clear here that they're not going to stand down when they're representing their clients. But, you know, one of the arguments that the firm has been making, including in response to some of the concerns that were raised by its own attorneys about their involvement in this particular Pennsylvania case, is that they're fighting for the rule of law. And so their argument is that we filed this case long before the election because we thought that there was a problem with Pennsylvania's election system. We did not know at the time, at least according to Jones Day, that this was going to become this closely, tightly contested election and that all of these other lawsuits were going to follow. The firm is simply telling their attorneys that we're fighting for the rule of law here. We want to make sure that the Pennsylvania election system is constitutional, whether that favors Democrats or Republicans.
The other law firm you mentioned, Porter Wright, they withdrew from the Pennsylvania case and said they'd no longer represent the Trump campaign and didn't say why. And the Trump communications director said leftist mobs descended upon some of the lawyers representing the president's campaign and they buckled. Any hints as to why Porter Wright withdrew?
Well, we can say for sure that it came after some of the same pressure, much of the same pressure, really, that Jones Day was facing, both externally and internally. Reportedly, there were similar meetings at Porter Wright where associates at the firm were raising very similar concerns. And reportedly, at least one lawyer resigned as a result of those concerns. But at the same time, I think it's interesting to keep an eye on these dockets and what happens in these cases, because myself and some of my reporters have been talking to legal ethics experts who have said you really want to watch and see how long some of these lawyers stay on these cases because of the potential ethics concerns and potential penalties, sanctions, et cetera, for pushing baseless cases. Anybody can sue anyone else for just about anything, but as the legal process goes on, at some point you have to present some evidence to back up what you're claiming. And if you don't have that evidence and it becomes clear that these cases are nothing more than trying to clog up the system or slow down election counts, those attorneys may be facing some sort of sanctions or penalties. And so the ethics folks that we spoke to said if you see them start dropping out, that may be very well a recognition that they're tiptoeing up against those ethical lines.
And their professional integrity is on the line. So do you see that as a concern to some of the lawyers within these firms, that the integrity of the whole firm gets tarnished because of these cases?
I think so. And you particularly see that from attorneys at these huge firms. Remember, we're talking about Jones Day as a firm with more than 1,000 attorneys. So there are just tons and tons of attorneys who are Jones Day attorneys who have absolutely no involvement in this case whatsoever. And you can see that they're saying, you know, we're being tarnished because of the Jones Day name, despite having no involvement in the case.
What seems like a clear example of the pressure is a lawyer for Trump's campaign yesterday said they're dropping out of the Pennsylvania lawsuit challenging the election results. And this is a day after complaining about being harassed for her work, including by an attorney from a firm representing the state of Pennsylvania.
Absolutely. So Linda Kearns, who is a solo practitioner there in Pennsylvania, she actually became the lead attorney on that case after Porter Wright dropped out in the face of some pretty significant public pressure. And then shortly after that, she told the court that she had received a threatening phone call from an attorney at Kirkland & Ellis, which is one of the firms on the opposite side of that litigation representing the state of Pennsylvania. And she told the court straight up that she was bowing out because of some of these attacks. Interestingly enough, the attorney who is now the lead Trump campaign attorney in that case, some eagle-eyed reporters noticed that on his firm's website, they're already calling President-elect Joe Biden the president-elect. And so there's some question there about how the campaign will feel about that.
Interesting. So, Chris, you study law firms. Have we seen law firms before? Law firms are sort of viewed in a different light than companies, at least to my mind, because they aren't necessarily endorsing the views of the people that they represent. You know, everyone's entitled to a lawyer. So is this attack on lawyers for whom they represent a change, or has it been going on for a while?
I think you're hearing voices opposing and criticizing law firms' work on behalf of certain clients louder and growing, certainly over time. You know, going back decades, particularly firms that work in criminal defense are often get a hard time and get a significant amount of public criticism for representing people or companies that have been accused of these just really heinous things. But there has always been this idea that lawyers represent clients, and the fact that a lawyer is representing a client doesn't necessarily mean that the lawyer supports the client, agrees with the client, thinks that what they did was right or what they're arguing is correct, but that everyone gets their day in court and everyone's entitled to a lawyer. What we'll be looking to see is that if any of this sticks and what happens next, just because Porter Wright dropped out of these particular cases, that doesn't mean that the firms are going to stop representing either the Trump campaign or the RNC going forward. And just because Jones Day is getting some heat here over this one case, I don't expect that to stop the firm from continuing to work in this space.
Thanks for being on the Bloomberg Law Show, Chris. That's Chris Opfer, Bloomberg Law team leader for the business of law. President Trump has resumed with one of his most successful priorities as president, the appointment of federal judges to make the judiciary more conservative. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is poised to continue pushing the confirmations to the lifetime appointments through until Trump's term is over. The pair have confirmed more than 220 lifetime judicial appointees to the federal courts, including three Supreme Court justices. Joining me is Professor Carl Tobias of the University of Richmond School of Law. Carl, so far, have any judges been confirmed during the lame duck session?
Yes, they have. Two were confirmed last week for the district bench, and this week, five are scheduled. One was just confirmed this morning, and the other four will be confirmed this week, a second one today, and then the others by Thursday. And so the seven will have been confirmed in the lame duck so far for the district courts.
Are these openings that have been in place for a while? Did they just come up?
Most of them have existed for some time. And, of course, if someone's confirmed this week, it means they've been through the process. They've been nominated and had committee hearings, approval votes in the committee, and then up for debate and then a vote on the floor. So they are not new, virtually all of them, though there are a few that are. And so, for example, there is a circuit vacancy that was just created when Juan Torriello died, who served on the First Circuit, and someone was just recently nominated for that position after the election.
So let's concentrate on the district court nominations for a moment. Are these going through on party line votes, as we've seen with most of the circuit court nominations, or are these different?
Well, some are. For example, the one this morning, nominee for the Southern District of Mississippi, was relatively close, 53-43. And so we may see that with some of these nominees. Especially if there's some controversy. And there's also the feeling, I think, among some Democrats that Mitch McConnell is jamming through people at the last minute after the voters have spoken in terms of who they want to be nominating judges.
Has this happened before?
Yes. In recent administrations, at the end of Obama's time, the Senate, when McConnell was in the majority, Republican Senate confirmed no one after July 6th. So that gives you a sense of the discrepancy between then and now. On the other hand, at the end of Bush in 2007-2008, Democrats were in the majority and they confirmed 58 district judges and 10 circuit judges, as opposed to the Republican majority in 2015-16 confirmed only 2 circuit judges and 18 district judges. And so there have been disparities depending on who's in the White House and who is in the control of the Senate.
Just explain once again the difference between these district court judges who are sort of like the trial judges in a federal system and what we normally concentrate on, which is the circuit court judges.
Well, this administration, the Trump administration, has focused like a laser on the appeals courts. And so there are only 3 vacancies now, and there were no vacancies for a short period, which is the fewest since Ronald Reagan was president, but has neglected to some extent the district vacancies and emergency vacancies. But the difference is at the appellate level, the rulings cover all of the states in a particular circuit, as opposed to a district judge who really only can't even bind people in the judge's own courthouse. And so essentially the appellate judges make more policy. And 99% of cases, the court of last resort is the appellate court that decides because the Supreme Court hears so few cases. And so that's why the administration has tried to keep all of those seats filled and may fill all 3 vacancies now. I think tomorrow we'll have Justice Amy Coney Barrett's replacement, who's been nominated, before judiciary for a hearing. And then the idea is to confirm him to her 7th Circuit vacancy.
What do we know about Thomas Kirsch, who has been nominated to fill Coney Barrett's seat?
He is presently the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Indiana and has experience in private practice with Winston Strawn, I believe a Chicago firm, and has served in and out of the Justice Department, U.S. Attorney's Office in Northern District of Indiana in his career, and I think is well-regarded. But he looks like a number of other nominees of President Trump, I think. But we'll see. Has strong support from the home state senators in Indiana.
So tell us about Judge Raul Arias Marxquak, who was nominated to fill the vacancy on the First Circuit Court of Appeals.
And he is a district judge whom Trump appointed to the District of Puerto Rico and has served for 18 months in that capacity. And so he's a nominee for the First Circuit, and I think that they will try to move his nomination as well. There's a 3rd vacancy on the 7th Circuit. Judge Flom assumes senior status on November 30, and the Republicans may try to fill that vacancy as well. And so I think it was a smart or astute choice on the part of the administration to try to elevate someone who was already on the district bench and someone from Puerto Rico, because there's a bit of a tradition there, to have someone from Puerto Rico on the First Circuit. And so the administration has someone they've already sent through the process, and the Puerto Rico district judge was confirmed on a 96-3 vote, and so had a very smooth nomination confirmation process. And so I think the hope is that he would be as smoothly confirmed in this situation, though again, it's after the election when he was nominated and would be confirmed if that happens.
Is there enough time to get all the confirmations for the 7th Circuit done?
Well, maybe. I think the one that's already been made and has the hearing tomorrow, for Kirsch, I think that could be done, because then he would just need a committee vote, which could happen in December, and then a final vote, which could happen in December. The others are more difficult. It depends on when the First Circuit nominee has a hearing, and then there's no nominee yet for Judge Blum's seat. So that could be tight because they only have a small number of working days after Thanksgiving when they come back. And then the Senate turns over, I believe, on the 5th or so of January. And so it's just not clear that there are enough, you know, legislative days to approve all three of those circuit judges. And then the question's also about district judges. There are five others who are on the floor and so have had hearings and committee votes. And those five could easily be confirmed in December. But there are 20 more who have been nominated by the president but not even had a hearing yet. And I think there's a big question mark as to those. We'll know. We don't know yet who's going to be on the hearing tomorrow. Besides Kirsch, it could be some district nominees, but that's not clear. And so it's not at all clear that any of those 20 would be able to get through the process if the hearings are not held till December. That's a very tight time frame, given what has to happen in that period.
So look back and on the 4 years of judicial nominations and tell us what President Trump and Mitch McConnell have accomplished.
Well, they've named three extremely conservative and confirmed three extremely conservative Supreme Court justices, 53 so far and counting similar appellate court judges, and 169 district judges after this week. Which is a relatively strong record, especially at the appellate level. So, for example, President Obama in two terms was able to confirm 55 appellate judges. So if only two more are confirmed, then President Trump would have matched that. And if he has all three confirmed, that would mean he named more in one term than Obama did in two.
Since Mitch McConnell has filled and looks likely to fill every single opening, what are the prospects for Joe Biden to appoint judges?
Well, there are some because, as I said, there are 22 vacancies at the district level where there are no nominees yet. So he's likely to inherit those. And then there's 20 more who have been nominated for vacancies. They haven't had a hearing yet. So that would come to 42, even if everybody else were confirmed by McConnell. And then there'll be more people who assume senior status and retire in the next year. So he may have a fair number of vacancies that he can fill, but mostly at the district level, not very many at the appellate level, unless judges presently sitting assume senior status. And there are a number of appellate judges who are eligible under the rule of are 65 and have 15 years of service. And so some of them may well assume senior status in 2021.
So then Biden would, to put it in colloquial terms, take back the nominations of those who haven't been confirmed yet?
They would expire when the new Senate comes
okay.
in. And President Trump, of course, could renominate them in that period, right, between the new Senate coming in and Inauguration Day. But I don't think that much is going to happen in that period. The Senate is getting organized, inauguration's being planned. The Senate may not even be in session much of that early part of January. So that's probably not realistic that much would happen by way of confirmations in that period of time.
President Trump has been able to nominate and get confirmed some very conservative judges, as we've discussed. What will happen when a President Biden nominates a very liberal judge? Are they likely to get through if the Senate remains in Republican hands?
Well, a lot depends on what happens in the two Georgia races that will be decided on January 5th. If Democrats are able to win both of those, then they would have a Senate majority because the tie-breaking vote would be the vice president. There is that possibility. If not, then McConnell, I think, would be the leader, and there would be a very thin majority in the Senate. And I think it'll be a matter of negotiation between the White House and McConnell. And Biden may, to some extent, have to moderate the type of people he chooses. I think he has a good relationship with Mitch McConnell and with many other senators with whom he served. And so he knows the process very well. He chaired the Judiciary Committee and was on it for three decades or more, and has very good people around him to help with judicial selection. Cautiously optimistic that that will go smoothly.
That's Carl Tobias of the University of Richmond Law School. And that's it for this edition of the Bloomberg Law Show. I'm June Grosso. Thanks so much for listening. And remember to tune into the Bloomberg Law Show every weeknight at 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Bloomberg Radio.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.